Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app. I want you to imagine for a moment the central villain in Alzheimer's disease.
For decades, we've had a pretty clear picture, right? It's been all about these toxic garbage piles.
Exactly. The amyloid plaques found outside the neurons, and then the twisted time tangles you find inside. We've spent so much time developing drugs to clean up those piles.
And, you know, it's critical to say that those clinical trials have, well, they've mostly failed to reverse the cognitive decline.
Right, which has forced researchers to ask this really compelling question.
What if those big aggregates, the plaques and tangles, aren't the primary villains at all? What if they're just a symptom?
And what if the real problem, the actual attack, happens much, much earlier? On a completely different level inside the cell.
That's where we're going today.
We're talking about these tiny dynamic compartments inside our cells called biomolecular condensates, or BMCs.
You can think of them as these little temporary filing cabinets. They don't have a membrane, a wall around them.
They just form.
They form through a physical process. It's called liquid phase separation, or LLPS. They're essential for concentrating proteins and RNA right where they're needed.
Like a little pop-up workbench.
Exactly. But they're supposed to be transient, liquid, flexible. In neurodegenerative diseases, that process goes rogue.
The liquid turns solid.
It transitions into permanent solid aggregates. And in doing so, it traps vital cellular machinery and just grinds everything to a halt. This physical shift, this liquid to solid transition, that's the revolutionary new target.
In this deep dive, it's all about a study that not only nails down the key protein that forms these condensates in Alzheimer's,
but it also introduces a small molecule that can actually reverse the pathology.
It dissolves these rogue assemblies, and the results in mouse models are pretty dramatic, a real rescue of cognitive function.
It's about hitting the disease at its very foundation.
Yeah. So today, we celebrate the work of researchers primarily at the First Affiliated Hospital of Chungking Medical University and their collaborators.
Their work is a huge advancement. It's really overwhelming proof of concept for the idea of the pharmacological modulation of PCBP2 condensates as a real effective strategy for treating AD.
Okay, let's set the stage a bit more because this is so important. We said that amyloid and tau are the classic hallmarks.
Right, but the drug pipeline targeting them has just been devastatingly dry, billions of dollars, and very little to show for it in terms of real patient outcomes.
It created this profound need to look further upstream, to find what actually kicks off this whole pathological cascade long before the plaques and tangles are everywhere.
And that search led them to a protein that was, frankly, a bit of a scientific mystery in Alzheimer's.
PCBP2. Poly-C binding protein too.
We knew it was an RNA binding protein, an RBP, and we knew its levels were way up in the brains of AD patients.
It's also found in stress granules, which are another kind of condensate.
So we knew it was at the scene of the crime, you could say. It was likely involved in stress responses, but its actual role in driving the disease, that was the mystery.
So the central hypothesis was pretty elegant, actually.
It was. Did this elevated level of PCBP2 protein actually promote this biomolecular condensation, this physical phase separation? And if it did, could that condensation be the actual driver of the disease?
And they found out pretty quickly that it was.
Oh, yeah. They confirmed that PCBP2 condensation wasn't some rare event. It was a key pathological feature right there in the neurons of human AD patients and in the standard animal models.
So it wasn't a coincidence. It was a fundamental physical change in the diseased cell.
Right. So the first thing they had to do, the first bit of detective work, was to prove that these things were genuinely liquid-like condensates, not just, you know, random clumps of protein.
And how do you do that?
You do classic in vitro reconstitution assays. You take purified PCBP2, mix it with some RNA in a dish, and just watch. And they saw them form these beautiful little droplets.
And these droplets behaved like liquids.
Absolutely. They showed all the core behaviors. They'd fuse together when they touched, just like oil droplets in water. And then they did a technique called FRIP.
Fluorescence recovery after photo bleaching.
That's the one. They basically use a laser to bleach a tiny spot on one of the condensates, and then they watch to see if the fluorescence comes back.
Okay, so for our listeners, what does that recovery actually tell us?
It's the ultimate test of fluidity. If that spot recovers its fluorescence, and it did very quickly, it means the molecules inside are constantly and rapidly swapping places with molecules outside.
So it's dynamic. It's a liquid, not a solid gel.
Exactly. The physics checked out. PCBP2 forms these pathological, dynamic, liquid condensates.
Okay, so the structure is confirmed. Now, for the really big question.
Yeah.
What was getting trapped inside this rogue filing cabinet? What was it hiding?
This is where they use a really sophisticated technique. It's called fluorescence-activated particle sorting, or FAPS.
That sounds complicated.
It is, but the idea is brilliant. They tag the PCBP2 protein in cells with a fluorescent marker, and then use this advanced sorting technology to literally pull out the microscopic condensates themselves.
They isolated them.
They physically purified them. And once they had them, they ran the contents through a mass spectrometer to identify every single protein that was trapped inside.
That's amazing. It's like collecting the contents of a safe after a robbery to see what was stolen.
And the manifest of stolen goods was stunning. It immediately linked two disease pathways that, before this, seemed pretty disconnected.
What were they?
Well, they found over 1,000 proteins enriched in there, but two categories just jumped out. First, they were trapping a huge number of mitochondrial proteins.
The cell's power plants.
Right. And second, they were trapping key RNA binding proteins that are involved in cellular cleanup.
Let's start with the power plants, the energy crisis.
So this is finding A. The FAPS analysis showed that PCBP2 condensates were sequestering a massive number of mitochondrial components, 140 of them.
And not just any components.
No, the really essential stuff. Parts of the respiratory chain, proteins needed for ATP synthesis. They were being physically pulled away from the mitochondria and locked inside these condensate traps.
Wait, hold on. So you're saying this one protein, PCBP2, by forming these condensates, can disrupt the cell's physical organization and its energy production at the same time.
Yes. With this level of direct physical evidence, it's a huge finding. This wasn't just a correlation. It was physical sequestration causing a functional breakdown.
Which leads to finding B.
Mitochondrial damage. By trapping all these essential parts, the structure of the mitochondria themselves just started to suffer. You could see it under the microscope. Structural damage, their internal ridges were reduced or even gone. The factory was falling apart.
And the functional results were just as bad.
Oh, absolutely. The cell went into measurable energy failure. They saw a big increase in damaging reactive oxygen species, ROS.
And a drop in oxygen consumption and ATP production?
A huge drop. This one condensation mechanism, by hijacking mitochondrial parts, directly causes the cellular energy collapse that is such a classic feature of Alzheimer's.
Okay, so that's the energy crisis. How does the exact same mechanism drive the other classic AD symptom, making amyloid?
And that brings us to finding C, amyloid regulation. Now, the condensate doesn't make amyloid directly.
Right.
It controls the machinery that regulates amyloid production, specifically by stabilizing the mRNA blueprint for an enzyme called BCE1.
ACE1, that's the big one. It's the molecular scissors that snip the precursor protein to create the toxic ABE peptide. So if you have more BACE1, you get more amyloid.
You got it. And the condensates do this by trapping the cell's cleanup crew. They found that the PCBP2 condensates were sequestering a key enzyme from the cell's waste disposal system.
The nonsense-mediated mRNA decay, or NMD, system.
And specifically an enzyme called UPF1.
So UPF1 is supposed to be out in the cell finding and degrading unstable mRNA blueprints, including the one for BACE1. But if UPF1 gets locked away.
Inside the rogue filing cabinet, exactly. By hoarding the UPF1 degradation enzyme inside the condensate, PCBP2 starves the rest of the cell of its cleanup crew.
Which leaves the BACE1 mRNA transcripts just floating around safe and found.
Protected. Free to be translated into more and more BACE1 protein, which in turn turns out more and more toxic apeptides.
That is the conceptual leap. The disease isn't just a broken protein, it's a spatial dysfunction. It's the wrong things being in the wrong place, which triggers both energy failure and amyloid buildup.
And they proved it. They made PCBP2 mutants that couldn't form condensates, and those mutants couldn't regulate BACE1.
Yeah.
It proves that the physical condensation itself is the pathological step.
It's the switch that flips the cell into a disease state.
It is.
Which, logically, brings us to the solution. If the problem is too much PCBP2 forming these traps, then the goal is simple.
Get rid of the PCBP2. Reduce the levels, and the condensates should dissolve.
So they started screening for small molecules, looking for something that could get into the brain and do just that.
And they found one, a small molecule called CN0928. It worked great in cell culture.
Which sets up the biggest test of all, finding DCN0928 efficacy in vivo.
This is the moment of truth. They gave CN0928 to the 5 bifate mouse models, which are classic models for amyloid pathology.
And the results.
Highly encouraging. The treatment significantly dropped both PCBP2 and BACE1 protein levels in the brain. And that led to a major reduction in the number of pathological condensates and a significant decrease in F deposit.
That's the molecular result. But what about the mice themselves? Did it help them?
It translated into a dramatic cognitive rescue. They used the Morris water maze.
A standard test for memory in mice.
Right, for spatial learning and memory. And the treated mice showed significantly reduced escape latency. They found the hidden platform faster. They spent more time searching in the right area. This wasn't just cleaning up plaques. This was reversing cognitive decline by hitting that upstream driver.
This feels really significant. It shifts the entire focus from damage control to source control.
It suggests PCBP2 condensation is the linchpin, the thing that connects mitochondrial dysfunction and amyloid production. It's a beautiful, unified theory for a very complex disease.
And crucially, it gives us a druggable target.
A druggable mechanism.
So let's talk about that mechanism.
Yeah.
Because CN0928 didn't just attack the condensate directly, did it?
No, and that's what's so fascinating. It has an indirect mechanism. They used chemical proteomics to figure out what the drug was actually binding to.
And the target was?
A protein called integrator complex subunit 1, or INTS1.
INTS1. That's part of a bigger complex that regulates gene transcription, how genes are turned on and off.
Exactly. It's a long-range control system. The evidence suggests CN0928 binds to INTS1. They even found this specific binding site. And this binding event somehow signals for the cell to downregulate PCBP2 expression.
So you hit INTS1.
Which reduces how much PCBP2 protein is made, which in turn reduces the amount of condensation, and that alleviates the entire AD pathology.
So this raises a really important question. Why is this approach better than, say, just targeting BACE1 directly? We have BACE1 inhibitors.
Because direct BACE1 inhibition only tackles one downstream effect, the amyloid. By targeting INTS1 to reduce PCBP2, you're hitting the source.
You're tackling both problems at once.
You are. You're simultaneously protecting the mitochondria from being hijacked, and you're releasing the cleanup crew, UPF1, back into the cytoplasm to degrade BACE1 mRNA naturally. You fix the energy crisis and the amyloid problem with one drug.
By modulating the fundamental physics of the cell.
You're not just cleaning up the mess. You're fixing the organizational problem that made the mess in the first place.
That is a much more robust approach. And it feels like a blueprint for other diseases too.
Yeah.
ALS,
yeah.
Parkinson's, they all have these aggregation problems.
It opens up a whole new therapeutic class, really. One focused on regulating the physical state of proteins inside the cell.
It's a huge step. But we always have to talk about limitations. What did the researchers themselves note?
They pointed out two main things. First, the target identification was done using cell lysates. Basically, a soup of cell parts, which might miss some of the dynamic interactions in a living neuron.
Okay.
And second, the special version of the drug they used for tracking, the biotin-labeled one, it couldn't get into cells very well, which made it hard to directly confirm that CML928 binds to INTS1 in vivo.
But the fact that it works so well in the mouse model still gives you a lot of confidence in the overall mechanism.
It absolutely does. It provides very strong evidence that if you reduce the abundance of this key condensate-forming protein, you can reverse the whole disease cascade.
Okay, let's try to synthesize this into our central insight for you, the listener.
The central insight here is that Alzheimer's pathology can be driven by the pathological accumulation of this RNA-binding protein, PCBP2, into liquid-like condensates.
And these condensates act as molecular traps.
Exactly. They seize mitochondrial components and the cell's cleanup machinery, like UPF1, this causes energy failure and increased BACE1 translation all at the same time, which ends up creating that classic apathology.
And the breakthrough.
The breakthrough is that you can use a small molecule, CN0928, to target a completely different protein, INTS1, which in turn reduces PCBPK2 levels. This indirect strategy effectively dissolves the pathological condensates and dramatically improves cognition in mouse models.
It's just amazing to think that after decades of focusing on these big garbage piles, the real solution might be about just reducing the size of the internal filing cabinets.
Mm.
So if the fundamental issue here is this weird spatial clustering where things are located, their physical state, does this suggest that we should think of AD and other neurodegenerative disorders as fundamentally spatial diseases?
I think it does. Absolutely. And if that's the new frontier, then what does this focus on spatial clustering mean for developing ultra-early diagnostics? Could we develop ways to track that liquid-to-solid phase transition in living neurons, maybe years before any widespread aggregation and permanent damage even begins?
That transition point could be the key.
It could be the next frontier for detection. A fascinating question to explore.
This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science base by base.
Shadows decay.